Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Jones Topsoil has been delivering topsoil, mulch, sand, and gravel. For greener lawns and brighter flower beds, call 1-800-TOPSOIL. Order online at JonesTopsoil.com.
Jones Topsoil brings it home to you.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is The Big Breakdown. A long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
First degree murder with three special circumstances, continuous abuse of a child, mutilation of human remains. Those are the charges against David Anthony Burke. And together they put the death penalty on the table. We haven't heard if Hochman is going to be pursuing it officially yet, but it's still there. My goodness, this has gone from a case where we were sitting here just a week or two ago going, maybe this was just all a horrible accident and then the cover up. And it's not going to go as far as death. Like, somebody's going to get in trouble without a doubt. But maybe this isn't as sadistic as it looks. It's as sadistic as it seems to look. Horrible. Whoever did this, whether it's David or whoever. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, is with us, along with Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Eric, let's talk about one of the things that DA Hochman has said. Financial gain. That's one of the big things they're saying as being a motive, a reason for this event to have taken place. And very specific wording, too, to maintain a very lucrative musical career that Celeste was threatening that night. That's the quote. That's what's in the document. That's very specific. I'm going to assume that they got something that very much points in that specific of a direction to make that specific of a statement on a charging doc.
Oh, I would totally think so. Usually it's best practices to kind of keep a lot close to the vest because you don't want all of your details out there, because then defense can begin scheming immediately as to how to thwart the prosecution efforts. But here, these are that's very specific wording. And my understanding is that the prosecution believes that David thought Celeste was going to harm his career, perhaps with a disclosure of some kind of information. Yeah. And so in order to preserve his future earnings, he took allegedly horrendous measures to try to silence that person. And that's how they're weaving it into this sort of financial motive.
Yeah, when I hear that language, in a lot of cases and a lot of things in life, there's a big difference between what we think and theorize and what we actually know for fact. And that's language to me that says, we know this as fact. And Eric, when you hear language like that, is it typically you think coming because you have a source that gave it to you? Or is it because you actually have digital evidence of some sort, where you actually have something in writing or some sort of forensic?
My mind goes to the digital forensics, Robin. You know, I'm sure that the prosecution has Celeste's digital devices and her accounts, and they can see what she was talking about, what she was texting to people, what she was emailing people potentially. And I'm wondering if it is based in something like that, because you usually don't make such a strong affirmative statement about the specific evidence you have unless you got the goods.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. You can't argue what exactly is said. It's not subjective. It's right here.
Yeah, I mean, I would guess that it has to be some sort of a text or any, I mean, again, my speculation, but something of that nature of, you know, if I, again, all conjecture, but you know, if I leave you, I'm gonna, you know, if you don't do this, I'm gonna expose you're doing this with a child, and God knows. What I also find interesting here, and Robin, you had touched on it a little bit, and this is some of the details, and I'm not trying to get gory or gruesome. It's not what we do here, but I mean, it is a part of the case now with what we're learning of what was done to her body. We've known that she's been cut up for quite a while. We already got that down, but now we're learning it, according to the authorities here and the medical examiner. It looks like there was apparently stab wounds or something of that nature on the body. They have ways of telling if those were received prior to the rest of the chopping. That's interesting to me, and especially the location of where they seem to have been, the abdomen area, liver damage, things of that nature. If you're going to stab somebody, I guess, with the intent of murder, I don't know. I've never done it, but that's not exactly where you aim to initially make that happen. The whole thing is weird. The whole thing, again, it just makes you wonder what exactly is going on here. And then also the dismembering doesn't appear to just be to fit it into the trunk or the frunk. There's fingers that were cut off and things of that nature. What the hell do you make of that?
The fingers bothered me. Everything bothers me. I mean, this went from what I was hoping was going to be accidental stupidity to really gruesome. I mean, beyond gruesome. And when I saw fingers, my mind automatically starts going to trophy. And when you start seeing things as potential trophies by this type of, that just triggers a whole different avenue of chaos and evil acts.
I went to witchcraft with it almost, like just with the darkness of his music and everything. I'm like, is he like trying to like live his image to like a real crazy extent of like, you know, it's part of a sacrifice. I don't know. It's weird.
I just start seeing more severe mental illness.
Yeah, probably. You're probably more.
I'm more of the pragmatic side. I try to use language that can relate to everyone from where they come from, but I just see much more mental derangement going on here. And when you get in a groupthink, and then we talked about this yesterday too, you know, and Eric, I'm curious whether you think this is going to come into play with prosecution and defense trying to go against it. But, you know, his lyrics of his songs, a lot of people can, you know, it's art. It has nothing to do with real life necessarily. But when you actually are seeing art imitating life and seeming to have in these overlaps and the congruence between the two, that could be a potential really difficult for the defense to overcome. What do you think?
I think that's going to be part of the theme, part of the story, part of the narrative that the prosecution puts forth, is that this person may have been an eccentric artist who became so delusional and so entrapped in his own fantasy of being some kind of macabre artist that he began acting out. You know, he has a song, I think it's called Romantic Homicide. Yeah. I think there's a video for it, and it contains a person who looks a Celeste. And there are some pretty macabre lyrics in there. And so what's this? Just in David's mind, some extreme artistic expression or something, as absurd as that might sound to you and me, perhaps someone who is so into that fantasy, and perhaps there were substances involved too. I don't know. That could be sort of the perfect storm for someone to begin acting out on what they might view in part as extreme art, which is a gross way to even think about this, but perhaps that's how David was thinking about it.
People do.
God. I can't, yeah. Has there ever been a case you can think of where extreme art goes into the defense or the prosecution of this? I mean,
gosh.
like this? I mean, this is, I can't think of anything. I mean, it's. You know,
what comes to mind, Tony, is certainly not to this level. This, we're talking homicide, dismemberment. Yeah. But, you know, you look at extreme artists like Gigi Allin. He was sort of a punk rock artist in the 70s and 80s, and he would throw excrement. He would get in physical fights with people attending his shows. He would spit and puke on people who are just at his shows. There are artists who are are inclined to take things to an extreme level, this would be the most extreme that I've seen.
Do you think they have any concern about the first degree murder charges? And is that why we're seeing the continuous essay of a child, the mutilation of human remains, and additional possible enhancements going on here? All the additional charges that are on here? Or is it just, well, we're going to throw everything we possibly can at him because it appears that he did all of these things, or are they stacking extra things in here because it might be very difficult to prove murder?
My interpretation, Tony, of the complaint and some of the public statements the prosecution has made is that they are sort of teeing this up and they are building a compelling narrative in terms of this wasn't some isolated freak event. It was something that was building over the course of time for very specific reasons. And so that's why they have the child essay charges. That's kind of the precursor. That's where the prosecution believes this starts. It escalates and it gets worse. And it sounds like the prosecution might believe that David thought this info would come out. That would ruin his career. He'd be done forever and probably be in prison for a long time. And so that provides a potential motive for him to silence a witness. And he's in fact there's a specific aggravating circumstance of silencing a witness whom I understand is Celeste. And so I think they're building this narratives and sort of telegraphing that in the way that they've brought charges.
Yeah.
And I did just look it up. There are actually cases where these horrendous murderers actually used art as their reason for they did things. Most notorious is Ed Gein, the butcher Gein? Of Gein, yeah, the butcher of Plainfield, 1950s, Wisconsin, treated body mutilation and dismemberment as a form of personal artistic creation.
And he made lampshades.
And just think what the Nazis did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so it's out there. There are very, very sick, twisted minds. Again, when you get in the world of broken brains and crazy nutters,
I once DJ'd a party across the street from the cemetery where Ed Gein is buried.
And you live too close to too many weird things, Tony.
Yeah,
you
always, my whole life is just surrounded in weird. But the headstone of Ed Gein, fun fact, has been stolen so many times it's not there anymore because people kept taking it. I think they found it in Washington State. Now, this is a Wisconsin crime. So it's like, think of that. I mean, think of moving a headstone. I mean, bodies. Are one like giant block of granite? Like just for it's yeah yeah.
Only you when I look something up so obscure do you actually know it?
I got a lampshade for you.
Eric, had you heard of that case, Eric?
What's up?
Had you heard of that case before?
Ed Gein?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, certainly. Yeah, that's
I'm the only one. All right.
There's Ed Gein one on Netflix, the Monster series. They just remember they did Dahmer and now they did Gein.
Right.
And I'll say this: the Monster series on Netflix is pretty over the top. Not exactly a historical document, but entertaining. I will say that much.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Let's move over to another topic here, another case. The autopsy is out. The charges are filed. And what came out of that courtroom on the one-year anniversary of the last day of Celeste Rivas Hernandez was seen alive. It's worse than most people were prepared for. Prosecutors say they've got 40 terabytes of evidence, a wiretap nobody knew about, three separate grand juries, and exploitation material found directly on his phone. His defense team response, speed it up, step on the gas, show us everything. And the question that won't leave me alone, the one that I think you might be sitting with too, is what were all the adults doing for 12 months between when this child vanished and when someone finally smelled something wrong in a tow yard? Your questions on Substack, on YouTube, drop them. We're going to try and get through them as we look at the David case. Let's start here, Robin. His lawyers are demanding a faster hearing. strategy. Some people waive the right to speedy. Some are like, let's step on the gas for different reasons. 40 terabytes, they haven't apparently seen yet. What do they know that we don't, that they're wanting this to move really fast?
You know, this is such a Bob question.
It is. I mean, it is, but I'm curious to get your conjecture on it.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, I looked up, there's a lot of legal reasons for this, that it's definitely unprecedented. Typically, they don't do this fast. They don't want to move this fast. Mm-hmm. But there's one theory that I kind of have in my mind. Because again, you place yourself in that situation. And so I'm going to answer it from a behavioral standpoint, not from a Bob Mata legal standpoint or our good friend Eric on the prosecution side as well. I think there's so much uh-ohs that have just happened with the release of the autopsy result and the terabytes and what we're seeing for child's S things on his cell phone and things like that. The faster they move, the less that's known in the media. I think it's really about trying to negate or at least lessen the huge negative impact or conjecture and all these things that are coming out. So let's move fast before people see even more. I really think that's part of it, because there is, with that much, think about that, terabytes of information, and none of it is any good. Yeah. None of it's going to be to his benefit. So if you want to not give people time to digest that much data, let's quickly move so you don't get to see that much data, and let's try to get this thing moving. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, again, we don't, not diagnosing him innocent until proven guilty, in our opinion, blah, 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 allegedly, put that in front of everything. The narcissists don't like their masks slipping. And if David is a narcissist, which it kind of appears that he may be, he seems to have some of the traits, the last thing they want is exposure. And I mean, this is why we've seen so many cases where we get right up to trial and they're professing their innocence right up until, and then suddenly it's like, oh, guess what? It's showtime. Here comes a spotlight. It's about to shift onto you. I did it. Shut the show down.
Ew. Yeah. AKA Rex Heuermann.
Rex Heuermann, Brian Koberger. I mean, we see it in a lot of cases like
control, that. Control, control,
control. 1,000%. And if that's, and they will exercise any monochrome of control that they can get, because that's big to them. That's all they have left. So it's going to be a big deal, and they're going to go on it full force. So I'm thinking you're right. I think that's probably some level of this. The less that can just linger out there into the ether, the better. But at the end of the day here, I mean, sorry, this shit's going to linger out there forever. Yeah. This is part of the record.
and I think as soon as, I think part of the strategy too, again, we're going to make our list for Bob tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think part of the strategy here could also be for the defense to get all the information for discovery as fast as they can before the media gets it, so they can make their determination as fast as possible and put a plea deal together. I think, you know, I know Bob said it last week and the week before as well. I'm leaning on, with this much information, with this many bad things going on, I can't imagine it going to trial. I mean, and again, but you never know on these things. But there's so much information, it looks like. And I think in order to keep control of the narrative, to actually have any potential for a plea deal of any site, I think that's why. I think they just want to move to that as fast as possible so they can actually have a good choice about how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like where we're going to go here is, and this is just my non-legal expertise. My legal expertise comes from talking to Bob a lot.
Right, I know we're channeling our inner Bob.
Yeah, you know, so that's what that, my gut on it is, we're looking at a situation here where death could possibly be on the table.
Yeah,
I
agree.
And I think that might be the only, that's the only, you know, piece that he has on the board to play with anymore is, okay, plead out and we're not going to try you for the death penalty.
Yep.
And you're going to be gone forever, but at least you won't die.
That's the route I'm going to. That's why you and I are aligned. We'll assault Bob with it tomorrow.
Okay.
Odd question for you guys. I was thinking about that.
Yeah, Todd.
Will he, you know, it seems like there's some dark stuff in this kid's mind, right?
Yeah.
Would he enjoy the death penalty?
Oh, God. Like the process, like being on death row, like going for the ride, essentially.
Because that's a long stretch, right? Yeah. That's a long stretch of time.
So it looked like his music videos, very macabre.
Exactly.
And dark.
Yeah,
it's a really interesting question. It's really interesting because, I mean, you know he's going to be creating art around all these things because he's all about the dark imagery. So he's going to be using something with it. I'd be really curious about, and again, now we'll shift on to Siobhan on Wednesday. I wonder about his, because people like this have a lot of suicidal idealization a lot of times too. I'd say if he had a suicidal idealization, he might be willing to go down that route. But if he sees himself as the martyred artist behind bars, I think it also be interesting too. Is there a Son of Sam law where he's being convicted? Because he could really profit handsomely behind. I mean, think about the following he has.
I think there is. I mean, it's California. I mean, there is some, whether it's called Son of Sam there, I don't know, but there's something in place.
Right. So he can't profit from, he can't take the proceeds from anything. So I think all those things are what the defense is going to weigh in on that. But really good insight and question, Todd.
I mean, we kind of thought that way about Koberger a little bit too. Like, is he enjoying the ride here? Is this part of what he wanted? But he didn't go for the whole trial. That would be part of the ride, I would think. If you did this, you'd want to go on. But I don't know. I mean, they can kind of pick and choose where they want to use their fast pass, if you will.
And that'll definitely play in. You know, so if he wants to go full trial, knowing he's going to get convicted anyway, again, I always just keep coming back to Taylor Swift using her real life for all their song lyrics. You know, and he's doing the same thing. I mean, he's using his real life, his real horrendously dark, evil life for his art. And so going through the trial. So I think if he wants to not share with the world the things he did and things he did to others, he would control it and plea out. But if he's proud of it, if he thinks it's part of his narrative of how he's living his life, he wants it exposed. So I think the plea, if he pleads or not, will be really telling on all that.
I think this is an interesting question here, and I want to give a quick answer before I toss it to you after I read it. They say this is from Steph via something. I don't, where is it? This is from email. They said financial gain as a special circumstances. They're saying he allegedly ended a child's life to protect a music career. This is the line that gets me. How does a person get that far gone? And I think a lot of people are wondering that. How are you that far gone? How do you get that far gone? It's hard to get that far gone if you were never there to begin with. and I think that's something that we forget, especially with some of these cases where they're this young. I mean, I know he's like, what, 21 now or something? This like 19 is earlier. So he was still a damn kid. He wasn't there. You can't get gone if you were never there. If you've just developed into this and you've had an ecosystem that has allowed you to become this, you were never gone. You're just functioning as you've been essentially bred, as you've been raised, as you've been conditioned, if you will, by your thinking, by your surroundings, you know, by a lot of different things. I don't know that some of these people were ever there to get gone. I don't know. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think he was ever there either. So think about, so let's do our thought experiment right here. So here's someone that had a lot of early success before the prefrontal cortex fully formed, before the age of 24, which means we're highly emotionally impulsive. We're not really clear thinkers on things. And he had zero guardrails. Even though he comes from apparently a religious family, he didn't appear to have any guardrails whatsoever about what he could or couldn't do. He had all the wealth he needed to do whatever he wanted to do. He attracted more nutters around him, all before their prefrontal cortexes and lobes are fully formed. So they're all completely batshit crazy. Mm-hmm. And no guardrails. And then you have proclivity for doing horrendous things to underage people.
Yeah.
It was never there. I don't think there was a semblance of healthy thoughts that was in his life to that point. Before we saw started hearing some discovery stuff, I was on the camp. This human being couldn't possibly have done anything horrendous. It must have been a mistake, a cover-up. Again, prefrontal cortex not fully formed. You have a panic escalation to try to do something because you're mistaken, whether it's a drug overdose or doing stupid partying, whatever it was, and she died accidentally. Nope. I don't think that... I'm all on board with just broken from the beginning, no guardrails, and bad crap really happened.
There is a question here in the comments I wanted to go back to. It's about Celeste's parents.
I just did even more research on them too. A lot of people knew about David and Celeste's family.
This is one, and I'm not going down the road that they were paid or anything like that. But it says, yeah, so strange with Celeste's parents. She knew where she was. We don't know for sure, but they had listed her as missing. But it does seem a lot of people knew where the hell she was. She wasn't like missing in like the sense of she's on the side of a milk carton. Oh my gosh, where did she go? Like, she was coming and going from the family dynamics here. Pretty much up towards the end.
Right.
Maybe not in a trunk or a Tesla. They let their little girl essentially live with a grown man. Why didn't they call the cops? Getting money? Maybe that's the question. And I'm not saying that. I'm not insinuating that. I think it's a fair question to ask. I think all that needs to be looked into, and I hope they already have. But yeah, I'm not in the camp here of just giving Celeste's parents a free pass here either. I know they're grieving. I know this is horrendous. I cannot imagine going through it, but there is responsibility to be had when you're a parent of a 13-year-old girl. She's not an adult, and sometimes you have to be a parent. I don't give a flying fuck how much you're working, how much you have to do this, how much you have to do that. Your number one priority is your child, and clearly by seeing the way the dynamics of this family worked, that child was not the number one priority, in my opinion. Your thoughts?
I agree. At the same time, This part confuses me, believe it or not. I keep all my research, and I literally, before we came on, I researched her parents again, what they did, what they didn't do. I see the comments right here. The PI's evidence that her family knew where she was. Okay, maybe. There's so much that you and I wouldn't do, but
yeah.
But I'm gonna pull the Bob Mata on this one. Where okay. But we don't know them.
We don't.
And so I don't want to cast shade if they did do all what I read. I mean, it says here that they were in contact with police a lot trying to find her. But at the same time, to everyone else's point, everyone else seemed to know where she was.
She's showing up on security camera footage. She's showing up on video.
See what I mean?
It's not, again, she's not milk carton missing. I don't
get it. I mean, that's what I mean. I don't get it. Here's what I would expect. I would expect, if they didn't give a rat's ass, that there'd be one police report and not another. But we have multiples.
Mm-hmm.
But not multiples with tons of follow-up, it looks like. I mean, just like, see what I mean? It's just,
I think they gave a rat's ass to a certain extent.
Yeah. So I guess it's, you know, it's kind of like being on the spectrum. I think, you know, you have you and me and all our followers obviously getting a rat's ass, which is way up here. And then you have their family, which wasn't down at zero, but maybe like right around 3 on a scale of 1 to 10. I don't know.
The other area of this that I don't have the answer to that I think would tell us a lot about it is, and I'm just going to be very blunt about it, she was a missing brown girl. And we know how that works.
I think that plays into it.
In a lot of cases where if she's a missing white blonde girl, whoa, well, there you go. You're, you know, headline story for Ashley Banfield. But on something like this, and I'm not casting dispersions on Ashley Banfield, I'm just saying that's, you know, how that sort of shit works.
Right.
In terms of where attention seems to go. And even deeper, what people click on. People always ask, why do they only cover this? Why do they cover that? Because guess what? The public's interest, if we put out two different videos tomorrow,
totally
one was
agree.
About this, one was about that. And I'm going to say, I really hope this one over here that's much worse about the little brown girl gets a lot more attention. Guess what's going to get more attention? Not that one. And that's not me. That's not you. That's society. That's the world doing what they do, making bad choices and not prioritizing every human as being on the same playing field. And that's shitty, but it is the world we live in. But I do wonder how much of that played into this in terms of the police response, the police investigation, before you got the rest of the world with talking about this, the podcasting, the news coverage of all of that, when she was missing for all of that time. Before this murder took place, we didn't hear about it. We didn't really know this little girl was missing or that there was a connection to this star. None of that was a story. I'm kind of thinking it might have been if there was a little blonde white girl that had been hanging out with the music artist. And then suddenly she's missing. That probably would have been a story. But for whatever reason, It wasn't. And I question, and I don't know the answer to this, but I do wonder what the response was from authorities of like, she's just a runaway. And it was just being handled like they do the other hundreds of thousands of runaway cases of, well, we hope she shows back up. Good luck.
So I definitely think that was part of it. We've seen it in too many cases for it to not be part of it. But I think it's one of a couple data points probably that led to this being the way it was. So you have that as a data point. Then I think also when you have private investigators or when you have people knowing where she is, and when whether the family knew directly or a 1 degree separation told the family, well, she's hanging out with this guy, David, who's this music guy. He's got a lot of money. And if you've got a chaotic life at home and you're dealing with a lot of chaos and trauma, and you know that one of your kids is not here, but I hear from the grapevine she's fine. You can rationalize not doing more about it. Again, pure conjecture, pure hypothesis. Mm-hmm. But when you put all these things together, cops aren't paying attention to it because it is what it is.
Yeah.
Then you have no pressing from the parents because we don't know what the cops knew about where she was or not, because they could have said the same thing. They said, well, if she's over here, because remember, everyone's always working with bandwidth. So here you have thousands of missing kids claimed, thousands. And you happen to know that the majority of the ones that are going missing, they're about to be trafficked. And you have one that's reported missing, but we know she's over here with this dude. Where, with limited bandwidth as a law enforcement professional, where are you going to focus? Where's the family going to focus? See what I mean? So it's I believe that probably too many people thought she was safe where she was when she actually wasn't.
It's a lot of looking back and coulda, shoulda, woulda, it feels 100%. Like in this case. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I don't know. I'm willing to hear anything in this case about how all of these things worked. I do not know the answers to these questions, but I think they need to be asked about the responsibility and what roles people were playing at what time in Celeste's life, or what they were not playing a role in where they should have been. These are fair questions.
And I'm still more on his parents
Every damn one of them. 100%. Every damn one of them.
Because they're all underage.
They were. Yeah, I mean, David was 19. At a time, he was, yes.
I know legally we've got that whole 18-year-old thing, but anyone under the age of 24, I think, is an underage moron.
I agree.
Or potentially.
Mentally, to be there as a responsible parent, yes. This is a bad recipe. The whole damn thing is a bad recipe.
Yeah.
Young fame, suddenly falling into money, the shelter, the religiosity, the situation of Celeste. I mean, everything is a bad. The whole damn recipe is shit. And when you mix all that together, you get something like this. And I think that's where we're at. Again, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to work our way through it.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They're also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.